This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to the Morning Run, 6 o'clock on Tuesday, the 16th of August. I'm Melissa Idris, and I have Khoo Soo Chuang and Julian Ng here
good
with
morning.
Me.
Good morning.
Good morning, people.
Morning. Good morning. Chuang,
yes.
You're going to be speaking to Ahmad Isham Omar on the Breakfast Grill today. And I'm actually quite excited for this Breakfast Grill for a couple of reasons. One, I don't know, you call it Ahmad Isham or Isham? He was on the Breakfast Grill in the early days,
yeah,
remember?
That's right.
One of the first few Breakfast Grill guests. And the second reason I'm excited is because he's a hoot. He is so funny.
I was wondering, what is a hoot? Is it an owl?
It is an owl. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. I attended an event, Shankar Santhiram, a regular guest on
Radio. So he's a comedian, is he?
Well, no, he's not a comedian, but he is just...
Naturally funny,
really? Yes. Really? So he gave a little bit of a forward or a little opening speech at this book launch of Shankar Santhiram, the motivational speaker. And Isham gave this speech entirely in, the short, what do you call the SMS lingo? The LOLs.
Oh, really?
And the...
No kidding.
ICMI.
Right. Okay.
GTYLs. It was hilarious. I haven't laughed that hard in a non-stand-up comedian's show.
So that was just a normal part of his speech.
Just,
it was
so funny.
He
was just talking, yeah. So anyway, I think he's good fun.
Yeah, you haven't introduced the company.
Oh, that's right. Of course. I'm so sorry. Ahmad Isham Omar, the CEO of Primeworks Studios, the content creation arm of Media Prima. It's one of the largest production houses in Malaysia. Ahmad Isham was also formerly the CEO of the Media Prima television network. So he was looking at the TV3, NTV7, NTV9, ATV, all those channels, the free-to-air channels. But he's then moved on now to creating his own content.
Yeah, he's just about the nicest guy you can meet. And I remember when Noel spoke to him.
I thought that was me. But anyway,
well, that you as well. You
sure,
as well.
Jules.
I'm flabbergasted.
Lost for words.
Yeah. So he is, and the thing is, when he spoke to Noel all those years ago, I was in the car going to some other appointment. I remember thinking, what a nice guy, what a funny guy, and he recorded some liners after that. And, just a very genuine guy.
Yeah.
And when I saw that he was going to come on, I was looking forward to it. Then I saw the name of his company. And when you compare that to, say, for example, DreamWorks, what a difference one word makes. Primeworks make it sound like he's like a steak restaurant.
That's the first thing that came into my head.
So I was going to ask him, can I have a ribeye served up medium rare, please? Isham.
Well, it's quite funny because how big... how big is this content creation industry?
Well, exactly. He used to run the platform, and now he runs the stuff that goes on the platforms. And actually, that's more influential in terms of people's peccadillos and habits and dislikes. So obviously, one of the first volleys I'm going to launch at him is this whole discrimination thing that's affected the film industry.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that this year also, it's not been a very good year for media companies, as with the rest of the economy. Revenues down, profits down, year-on-year basis. So I am just wondering whether these content providers play a more prominent role, or is it the case that media companies would also cut on content?
Well, it's both, isn't it? And it's kind of like the tail that wags the dog or the other way around, because if you produce stuff which is attractive, interesting, entertaining to watch, then by correlation, you get the ads and the revenue that come along with it, as well as the corporate sponsorship.
Has it evolved all that much from the early days of telenovelas and dramas? I mean, that used to be the mainstay of local content creation, right? Now, has that evolved? I mean, I know Malaysia's doing lots of things in the animation space as well, but what exactly has Primeworks been up to in the past few years?
Well, their new tenderloin is actually quite good.
Medium rare.
Well, I don't know, because there's a whole swath of people in urban areas that have never watched, they don't watch at all local vernacular productions.
Okay.
Well, they have a lot. I mean,
they have a lot.
I'm just looking at their website, and you have things like Mad Markets and Without Boundaries, Jalan Jalan Cari Makan, things like that. So locally produced shows.
Yeah, I think now kind of catering to the flavor of the young, you know, lots of travel shows, lots of food shows.
Yeah.
You know, more globalized TV audience, I would say. Okay, well, lots to discuss about the content creation of Malaysia, content creation industry of Malaysia with Ahmad Idham Omar, CEO of PrimeWork Studio, one of the largest production houses here in Malaysia, as well as the an arm of Media Prima. So, Chuang, do you consider them competitor? So are we grilling our competitors?
Well, in
morning?
A way, yeah, because the Media Prima Group contains some radio stations, and it's actually quite good in the sense that he's willing to come on, and you know, it's all about expanding the pie, isn't it?
Exactly. 8:05 is the breakfast grill, and after that, current affairs. Today we take a look at the Philippine president Rodrigo Duterte. Because the Philippines has for decades been deeply entrenched in political dynasties like the Ferdinand Marcos, Benigno Aquino, and Gloria Arroyo. Excuse me.
Magapakal.
Magapakal.
But then Duterte came along. He positioned himself as an anti-establishment guy. And he said that he's a new breed of politician. So we really want to explore this morning if he is in fact revolutionary or if he's just another version of the Philippines' political dynasties.
Well, in the sense that he's a gun-toting, you know, Betty-maiming guy, you know, he reminds me of Dirty Harry, and you know, it wouldn't be a
shoot first, ask questions later.
Precisely, it wouldn't be a huge stretch to rename him Dirty Duterte.
You know, 700 people have been killed since he launched this war on drugs.
Yeah.
Yep. Seven.
And how much of it
people?
Can be traced directly to him?
Yeah. So let's
his endorsement, at least.
Yeah. His endorsement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Let's find out more on current affairs today as we speak to a whole host of Philippines experts about the presidency of Rodrigo Duterte. And on the BBC, the BBC's business series this week, Peter Day learns the lessons from businesses that have fallen victim to corporate espionage. And he finds out that most companies' Achilles heels lie in the least expected places. Corporate espionage. I don't know. It just sounds very James Bond to me. I mean, spies and espionage. I know it happens, but sometimes I think it happens in faraway places.
Yeah, so you got James Bond, then you got Jason Bourne, and then you maybe have someone in between called James Bourne.
like the love child of both.
They haven't actually.
Except he's got lots of pimples on his face, and he's got a laptop in front of him.
Like
well, because that's
like
where.
A hacker.
But exactly.
Yeah, I think they haven't really done a genre on that, right?
Well,
corporate.
No. Well, exactly. No, no, they've got the, you know.
What about Mr. Robot?
Mr. Robot, that's
Mr.
right.
Mr. Robot,
yeah.
Is that corporate espionage?
No, that's just corporate destruction.
That's just hacker.
Well, the destruction of capitalism.
He's got eyes bigger than goldfish, that Mr. Robot guy.
Well, you need big eyes.
Exactly.
Just the amount of time he spends in front of a screen.
Yeah,
good actor, though. Very good actor.
Precisely, precisely.
Rami Malek, yes, for sure.
But I think you know, in this day and age of corporate dealings, we're always talking about the largest companies in the world and how they are part of that industrial complex, right? All these industrial complexes. I just wonder who commits all this espionage, whether it's the smaller and mid-sized companies rather than these huge conglomerates who already have everything and are so powerful.
Well, it's all about getting an edge, isn't it? So you would imagine that someone like a Samsung would love to have dibs into Apple's next designs in terms of mobile phones.
True.
So they would. I'm not saying that they are corporate espionagers. But
spies, you mean.
Yeah. Spies, correct.
Yeah, spies. Corporate espionagers.
But they would contract people like Mr. Robot to, you know, to infiltrate.
But okay, so this may be a gross generalization, but you know, they often say that China is you know, tends to dally in this corporate espionage, and they, you know, steal
That's
secrets
right.
and take it back
yeah.
and
the,
duplicate
the thing,
it.
The thing
cheaper.
With China is that there's so many SOEs, right, state-owned enterprises, and a lot of the stuff that they do, you would feel that it's endorsed by the government of China and therefore political. But I'm just talking about pure capitalistic espionage, you know, good old capitalism and good old espionage. Right?
So what, do they carry like a little pen that takes a photo that Q gave them? I don't know what, you know what I mean? It's, oh wait, our cell phones, our mobile phones do that now, right?
Well,
we don't need a pen
well,
that
you know,
takes
people
a photo.
Don't, people might not want to buy as, well, I don't want to say the brand because, you know, they might get quite incensed by it. But, you know, China-made phones. And people are always a bit afraid that, you know, there's inbuilt microphones and cameras that are filming your every move.
Well,
you know?
that's a lot you know.
Yeah. That's privacy as well. Enter the space of personal privacy, and that's pretty scary as well.
Okay, so corporate espionage, the topic of the BBC's Global Business Series today, 9:35 a.m. You should check that out. But it's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock now. Let's take a quick look at the news as you start your day. The Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission yesterday arrested three government officials, two with the honorific title Datuk Sri and another with Datuk. And they were arrested for corruption, frozen their bank accounts with more than 13 million ringgit in there.
Yeah, so that's about one every two people in Malaysia, right? One of those. Those are one every 1.5.
And 13 million, that's nothing.
Wait a minute. Also seized were several luxury condominium units, including penthouses, bungalows, and posh cars like Maserati, BMW, and Audi. I can't believe this article is written like that. Posh cars.
For Disney.
And all these were believed to be the proceeds from corruption and money laundering.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I have to say, yesterday we were talking about progressive stories in Malaysia. So, good job, MACC, for doing this. Finally, I mean, we often talk about them letting go of the big fish or not going after the big cases, right? So, I mean, 13 million, that's significant to me.
Well, the question is right now whether this is the start of a new era of transparency and accountability. I mean, we are all, we've been there before and we are all quite skeptical.
We've bought the t-shirt, we've got the video, we've seen it a million times, that movie.
So, Chuang, yesterday Julian, Ibrahim and I were talking about corruption and amnesty, whether that is, in fact, the right way to do it. So yesterday, MACC came out to say, if you have ever been involved in corrupt practices, surrender now and we will give you a lighter sentence. So we were discussing, Julian, whether that was, in fact, the best way to do it, whether offering amnesty is the best way to get corrupt people out.
Correct. Well, amnesty has been deployed to great effect in Hong Kong in the 70s and 80s. But you have to imagine that it has to be deployed correctly, because you don't want to be saying, we'll give you amnesty in, say, 2 years' time. And between now and then, it's party time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, also, I think size matters.
Cram as much as you can.
Well, precisely.
Size matters as well, because, I mean, with the Hong Kong case in the 70s, it was all about minor corrupt offences. Well, and since then, that time, they've had very high-profile cases of corruption, making it to the press just to show people, right, to make a deterrent of people. And I think in Malaysia, you need that, because if you look at the weighted average, as it were, of corruption being committed, right, it usually concentrates on just a few people.
Correct.
You would have to guess is that, right? And all the other guys that are providing, committing 5 million, 10 million here and there, corruption. So like those are the small guys.
It's your thing on trickle-down economics, because the top 5 or 10 or 50 guys, they're gorging, they're eating the caviars and the prime steaks.
And the crystals.
And the crystals. And these guys are feeding off the bits and bobs that come off the table. 70 million is nothing. And I'm serious, right?
And you know what? Maybe I've been watching too much TV, but...
You have been watching too much TV.
Whenever you arrest people, right, don't you reveal their identity?
Precisely.
What's this with keeping their identities under wraps?
Maybe innocent until proven guilty in the court.
Yeah, you know, you read them their rights, you have the right to remain silent, all that kind of thing, right?
Well, that's very US, right? Yeah. Yeah. The Miranda rights,
Watching too much
TV. Well, I think you should watch this space for sure, because, you know, we may get the identities of this trio of Datuk Sris and Datuk Sri.
Well, you have to say that the new MACC guy has got his work cut out for him, because he's come in under this veil of suspicion, because he's come from the AG's chambers, and he's got to stamp his mark on the territory.
So, this is his way of, baring his teeth a little bit in the early days.
It is definitely a way of baring his teeth, but he's also got to, step
bite.
Up, because
he's got to bite a little bit instead of just bare his teeth.
Well, precisely. He's only showing off his little, premolars.
I own some cats, right? And they all bare their teeth, but they're pussies, basically.
They're really nice, kind creatures.
Okay, coming up to 6:15 now. We'll be back with more in just a few minutes on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Man Who Sold the World by David Bowie. Was that in any way a reference to the story we were doing just before the song came on about MACC and corruption and The Man Who Sold the World?
Well, you know Bowie, he can predict these things.
Of course. He is quite clairvoyant. 6:20 this morning, Tuesday the 16th of August. That was Julian Ng you just heard with Kusu Chuang and me, Melissa Idris. I like to think of you guys as my friends. But you know what? Apparently, according to new research, only half of the people you consider your friends think you are their friend. So when you call someone a friend, it goes without saying that, you know, they too consider you a friend. It's a reciprocal thing. But a recent study has found out that this is only probably true about 50% of the time. Only half of perceived friendships are actually mutual. Chuang, I'm looking at you.
Yeah. Well, you know, this whole concept of reciprocity among friendships has been a subject of huge, heated debate through the years. And it depends on what you define as friendship, really, right? Mm. Because people's definition differ from person to person. For example, the scientist in this particular story defines friendship as someone that you want to spend time with and want to learn about and or converse to him about, or him or her about you. You know, my concept of friendship goes a lot further, because can I trust you? Can I leave can I leave loved ones with you? Can I invest and you know, leave money with you?
Wow. Oh, yeah, it's much, much deeper than that. Give me your money, John.
So Julian,
you can trust me with your money.
With his big, huge, liquid eyes, and you know, trust me, I'm a doctor. I'm a banker. Yeah. It's even worse.
I think a lot of it also depends on our modern social setup, because we are not in a position to be totally honest with each other, right? So many times you think that somebody likes you, but actually they don't. They're just being polite with you. And it reminds me of this movie that I watched with Ricky Gervais in it, one of my most favorite actors. The Invention of Lying. Have you guys seen that? It's not a very good...
Can I watch that? I'd love to learn one or two things.
Yeah, it's not a very good movie, but the concept is really good, because he is a person who cannot lie, and because
Ricky Gervais, he's always lying on stage.
Yeah, but the premise of the movie, that's
right.
What makes it so funny.
In the movie, the actor, the character that he's playing cannot lie, and it leads him to all sorts of social problems because of the fact that he has to tell the truth all the time. But going back to the real world, we lie all the time, right? And that's like why certain people are our friends and certain people are not, even if we think they are, because they're lying, right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, actually Tun Musa a few days ago, he said that, you know, when he's in political office, he was too honest and he was always speaking frankly. That landed him in a lot of hot soup.
And the title of his new book.
Precisely. So some of my female friends ask me, hey, Chuang, do I look fat in this dress? And I go, no, you look fantastic.
That's the right response. Well,
that's
thank
the
you,
correct
Chuang.
It might be a lie. Do you know what I mean?
What do you mean it might be a lie?
It might be a lie.
That is an automatic response. You don't even think about it. It's like reflex, my friend, reflex. Okay. But all right. So, I mean, how sad is it that some people think that they are your friend, you are their friend, and you don't consider them? So, I mean, it's not just about lying, right, Jules? It's about, I would say that's a really kind of a mismatch of the current world. I mean, you know, when we were younger, you knew who your best friends were.
You'd spend
all your recess time with them. But as you get older, I mean, according to this study, which was reported in the New York Times, that people you consider your very good friends in a scale of 1 to 5 doesn't necessarily rank you the same level. And I'm wondering where that comes from. Is that like are we not reflecting what we truly feel?
Yeah. When I was younger, the litmus test was if you had an accident at 4 o'clock in the morning, you were taken to the Balai Police, you know, who would you call? Who would be your best friend?
This would be when you are like 24 and out drinking the whole night, right? You think about these things, right?
Correct.
As you get older, your circle of friends kind of shrink.
It definitely shrinks.
But why does it shrink?
Time constraints.
Exactly.
And then you've got to choose who you're going to spend time with.
But like you just mentioned, Chuang, your benchmarks get higher, right? Your standards get... Who can you trust with your loved ones? Who can you trust with your money? Who can you, you know will be there for you?
I can see Julian's eyes getting bigger and bigger.
It's like, wow, that's a lot to ask
for me. For me, it's a case of really, as I get older, I don't really care who my friends are.
Exactly.
And I'm happy with the fact that I have a small group of core friends and they're my best friends. So. Yeah. That's what is important to me. And I think that after having said that, I think that not a lot of people like me. So that works well as well. But not because I'm a bad guy or anything, but I think that we tend to go our own ways as we grow older.
Yeah, and
Yeah. And we feel confident about doing that as well.
Precisely.
I feel like American sitcoms have set an unrealistic expectations of what, you know, your core group of friends need to be. I don't have a Ross or Rachel or Chandler in my circle. I mean, I don't hang out
it's
at coffee shops.
It's more than 10 years already, Melissa, since Friends ended.
10 years? Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
Yeah.
But, you know, the idea that in your late 20s, you need to have this kind of small circle of your picked family, so to speak, right? As friends. And if you don't have that, means you're not cool or you're not, you know, you're not social.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a bit of a generation gap here, Melissa, because you're a lot, I would say you're a lot younger than Julian and myself.
You.
And, well, sorry.
Certainly. Yeah, she is.
Well, yeah, you are. And I'm in Julian's camp. And as I get older, I don't really care if I got friends or not. I don't really care if you like me or not. I just want to go my own way, like that Lenny Kravitz song.
Right, okay. Okay. But would you, okay, so do you find yourself still mixing with people outside your demographic now, outside your same age group, your social circle? I mean, wouldn't it be lovely if your best friend was a 70-year-old man you hung out
or,
at?
Or conversely, yeah. And this goes to one of the points in the story, I like to spend time around younger people, you know, people in the 20s and 30s, because they are our future, like that Michael Jackson song.
Oh my God.
No, but I'm saying,
so I can see how you lead your life. It's around music and TV shows. And,
yeah, but you know, there's lots to learn from these from younger folk as well as older folk. And but then it goes back to the concept of friendship. Do you see friends as investments and people that you have to put value in, and expect a return from them?
Wow, that's really important.
That was part of the story.
No. Oh, was that part of the story?
Yeah, it was.
So reciprocity, right?
Yes.
Well, yeah, because as you grow up, you know people tell you it's not what you know, but who you know, etc. And it's so true.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to invest your time in the right people. And at some point in time, it's going to pay
see,
dividends.
I think that's the problem as well. Like, you're investing in people as though you were making an investment in a financial asset, hoping to get something in return. Do you guys think that this has got something to do with our social makeup today, which is very different from, let's say, 50 years ago or 100 years ago, where people used to live in a more communal-like environment, right? You care for your neighbors, you go over once in a while to give them some cake
or something,
right? Today, you don't do it because, one, as you say, time.
You're gonna
you
get
don't
ahead.
Have time and yeah, exactly.
Well, you don't have time, and the time that you have, you want it to be downtime. You know, you just want to crash in front of the couch and in front of the TV
and watch
Netflix.
About a time from the past when people used to be more friendly with each other.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then in your working days, you might want to spend time and invest in someone who might give you, for example, hypothetically, someone from the ruling coalition that might give you a project or something.
Oh, networking,
give
you
a concession.
Wait, that's different though, because that's not friendship. Networking is not
But you might
friendship.
Portray yourself as a friend.
But that kind of behavior has overtaken people's life. It's now normal to have that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
And that overtaking the idea of friendship. And,
yeah.
and I think it's so sad and unhealthy.
It is very, but you know, equally, this is whole concept of Schadenfreude, right? Where people
that's a big
that,
word. Talk to me.
It means people getting happy with
See
bad
other
things.
People,
well,
bad
well
thing
no,
happen.
They might portray this. Oh, Julian, I'm so glad you got that project. I'm so glad you bought that bungalow with two Audis in your car park and behind your
you
bank.
You mean posh
like,
cars?
Yeah, posh car. Precisely.
$13 million in your roof.
Guy. And then, but behind your back, they say, "Oh, that's Julian. I'm so jealous." But that's what Schadenfreude is.
That's what
it means. Jealousy is envy, really.
Okay, thank you very much, Sean, for the
word of the day.
That's a Sherrod word, by the way.
Oh, yeah, he is coming back soon, so he'll update our vocabulary very, very well, I'm sure. Coming up to 6:30 News with Audrey Raj next on BFM 89.9. Good morning. It's coming up to 6:40 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Kusi Chuang and Julian Ng. Avocado toast. I always order that whenever I go and have brunch with my girlfriends. But it turns out that an unprecedented international appetite for avocado is indirectly fueling illegal deforestation and environmental degradation. This is in Mexico at the moment. So I guess avocado is something maybe we might have to do without for a while.
I think this is where, market capitalism meets with our social desires, even our philosophical desires, right? Because it has become the trendy food of the 21st century. Same with the problems we have with other food stuff, like, you know, palm oil, clearing forests to just grow palm oil because of the demand in palm oil. And what do we do about this?
When did avocado toast get so trendy?
I want to question Joanna Blythman's story because in the first place...
You question the Guardian journalist.
Yeah. Well, exactly, and they should be the question because at what point, you know, do people's avocations for a vegetable drive deforestation that is not only...
What was the question?
Well, it's a stretch, isn't it? Because some people like avocados and that leads to illegal deforestation. It's like saying, I like chocolates and therefore, you know, parts of Peninsula Malaysia are now...
But why not, Chuang? Because, like, for example, if you like pangolin and a hunter goes out there to hunt pangolin for you, there is an environmental effect.
I don't think so because not many people, A, can afford avocado and B, even like avocado.
Well, it's being sold everywhere. It's on the menu of almost every hipster cafe.
Every supermarket you go to, like, avocados are spilling out.
Have you tried
to
buy an avocado? It costs an arm and a leg and maybe your 2 right toes as well.
Yeah, it does. It's like saying, you know, it's so expensive, nobody buys it anymore, but they're still there, right?
It's so expensive.
It's being stocked in the supermarkets.
I have to disagree with you. I think that there definitely is a demand for avocado, even here where it's all imported, right? And at almost every cafe, you see it on the menu. I don't know when this happened, but suddenly avocados are the in thing to have.
It's healthy, actually. Avocado is a very healthy fruit or vegetable.
So because now of this worldwide demand, it turns out that farmers in Mexico think it's more profitable to plant avocados. And this has kind of thrown the whole ecosystem there through a loop because, you know, the time that it takes to grow avocados, they're not planting anything else. And have we disrupted the world ecosystem by our relentless demand for avocado toast?
I had it last night. Is it wrong?
I love avocado toast.
I had it for dinner.
Yeah. Is it? And the other question is whether it's wrong because if we are eating something that's healthy for our body, is it wrong to clear forests for it?
Well, it's a bit like if people love cod and people love salmon. Do you know what I mean? And in the old days, you just get it from while hunting in rivers, and then because everybody started living cod and salmon.
So I know the answer to my question is wrong, right? Because we are dwindling resources.
What can happen now, like with your example, Chuang, with salmon and cod, there's sustainable fishing. Now there can be sustainable, environmentally friendly avocado toast.
Yeah, sustainable avocados.
Yeah, I mean, this is something for Bill and Melinda, their foundation, to get their teeth into in GMO agriculture.
Well, by that time, it's too late already.
Yeah, but... Look, I also take offense at the fact that only hipsters like avocado because, Julian, you and I like avocado. And
you're a hipster, Chuang.
You are a hipster.
No.
Sorry.
I have a Vespa, so that makes me
part
hipster.
You're the father of hipsterism.
Embrace
you
it. Created. Work it, girl.
I put the stern hipster.
On the hip.
No, that's just part that hurts.
No, that's the wrong title. I agree with you because a lot of people do like avocados, not only hipsters.
Do we have to be hipsters to like avocado? No, right?
Of course not.
No, for sure. But I think it's really kind of changing the way. Lots of people think that it's not healthy. I mean, Jules, there are people who will challenge your assumption that it is a healthy fruit because it is essentially very high in fat, right? So there will be people who say, well, stay away from avocado if you're on a diet.
You know what else is being challenged? What we think of whether char kway teow is healthy or not, because the BBC has voted it as one of the healthiest dishes in the world, top 10 healthiest
char
dishes in the world.
No
char kway teow. So avocado, char kway teow, avocado, char kway teow. I don't know. I think
what about avocado char kway teow
with char kway teow?
Gross.
It might work.
That's like about 55 trillion calories in one plate of char kway teow.
What? How can char kway teow be healthy?
Yeah.
First of all, it's essentially pure carbs and oil and fat.
No, it's not. It has all the elements of a complete meal, said the article. The egg content combined with the yellow and flat rice noodles provide a broad spectrum of nutrition, including proteins and essential amino acids. There you go.
I'd love to have some of what that guy is smoking, seriously, because it sounds like some pretty strong stuff.
Just go out and have a char kway teow.
Right, so our... our perception or our understanding of what's healthy and what's not is constantly changing.
Yeah.
Right?
So mind you, this is after they voted nasi lemak as also one of the healthiest
you've
foods
You've got
around.
To be kidding
he
me.
He had a double dose of that funny cigarette.
Oh, that
I'm
was
sure.
time. I'm sorry.
They've been smoking from
be
the same dealer.
Anyway, so what we think is healthy now may not be what other people think is healthy. Looking at Italy. So Italy wants to jail parents who force their kids to be vegan. So if you're a parent and you're vegan, in Italy, you can be put in jail if you force your kids to, if you don't feed your kids a non-vegan
totally
diet.
Totally agree with this. I totally agree with this.
But some people see veganism as a lifestyle, right? It's like it's almost spiritual in its in their
it's,
belief.
Yeah, it's
it.
Philosophical, it's spiritual, and that may be at odds with what's biological and physical, right?
Yeah,
with physical, you've got to obey the rules of nature. You can't just say, oh, my body wants to be, my head wants to be a vegan and therefore my body has to comply. I don't think you can do that.
I just had this vision of Jules. His head
stop
his
having
body.
Visions of me.
Dismembered, having different ideals. No, you know, people adopt veganism when they're fully grown and, you know, fully physically evolved, I think. Not when you're like 3 months old and you're going to foist your, you know,
but
your,
it's like
your
a,
ideas.
It's like a religion, guys. It's like a religion, right? So you believe in veganism. It's you believe in the principles of veganism. You practice it as a lifestyle. It's like a religion.
Which is
and
which
how,
is not
how
a bad.
Parents pass religion on to their kids. It's the same thing.
Yeah. And just to put it out there, that is not a bad philosophy that you don't want to exist on the exploitation of animals. That's okay. But, you know, your body needs still need all the nutrition it can get to
I
grow.
Know lots of people who have a different religion and they believe in bacon. Do you know what I mean? And
that's
they
my
worship
religion.
That. That
yeah. You know, and it becomes quite heroic, you know. But I understand.
Okay. It's gotten really bad in Italy because 5 children have been hospitalized within the last 18 months because of their vegan diet. Last year, an Italian court ordered a vegetarian mother to cook meat for her 11-month-old baby after the woman's ex-husband complained about the child's diet. How do you guys feel about the court coming in and meddling into somebody's dietary needs?
Well, society frowns on murder, right? So I think this is
but
where...
But do you think this is just bad parenting?
I think
this
so.
Is murder. I think this is murder. If you don't feed your growing child the right thing, they can die.
Yes, unless you can prove, you know, beyond good doubt that
what about,
you can get protein from other sources.
What about imprisoning parents who feed their kids fast food or soda? I mean, isn't that also bad parenting
also,
you know, not providing the right nutrition for kids?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing, right? But I don't see it happening that way.
Good point, yeah.
Yeah, it goes both ways. So maybe, you know, government should learn about, you know, bringing up balanced parents.
I just don't believe government has a role in this. I mean, this is something between parent and child. I don't think it's has any space in, you know, for a government intervention.
But you see something
I don't know. I agree. I kind of agree with this because this is something that's very unnatural, and I take your point that sugar and all these other foods are very bad for you, but they don't necessarily kill you in the short term. But veganism, especially for a toddler, is going to have wide-ranging long-term consequences.
Here's another angle, right? Should both of you be commenting on this if you have no children?
Ooh,
you know what I mean? Yeah, no. I mean,
you're right.
Because sometimes I'm in the car with people who have children and, you know, people on the radio talking, you know, with some authority or apparent authority on stuff they don't have any experience
over. What about you, Chuang? You're a father.
Yeah, tell us. What do you think?
I just stuff them full of food.
As long as they're happy and full.
You know, sometimes, yeah. So you make an effort to give them all the food groups and all that. And you make it a point to give them, you know, lots of meat and lots of this and that. And, you know, the thing is today, there's so much chemical and so much additives and all kinds of steroids and whatever in lots of meat that you ask yourself, should you be giving chicken? Because you know, you've seen those pictures on Facebook, and therefore they must be true, that chicks from you know, 2 centimeters high become 3 feet high or whatever.
Yeah.
In 3 weeks. And, you know, you got to ask yourself, how do you achieve this growth? So it's a much more complicated issue than that.
Right.
So the moral of the story is go out there and get a plate of char kway teow.
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, it's one of the most healthiest foods out there.
And all the food groups.
Where just throw some avocado on as well.
And Bob's your uncle.
Coming up to 6:50 right now. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.